listening to the NarniWeb.com podcast, and I'm your host, Rillian. Welcome again. Hello everyone, welcome again. I'm your host, Rillian, and welcome to the NarniWeb Council. We've got a little bit of news before our main feature today, which is our review of the extended edition of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. First up, we're going to talk about the interview that Narnie and Princess got with Douglas Gresham over at narniafans.com. And we're also going to talk about the Grammy nominations for Harry Gregson-Williams. So we just got a little bit of news there to wrap up. We did not discuss the Pinewood London shooting information because it's been, we did actually record a little bit of it where we discussed what's going on, but it's been so difficult to keep track. Your best bet to stay up on that is to visit narniweb.com and just look at the articles there. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and have our guests on now. I'm here with Glumpuddle once again. Welcome, Glumpuddle. Good to have you back.
Ditto. Good to be back.
And we are also here with Doobie from Australia. Welcome, Doobie.
Hi.
All right, we're going to just go ahead and start talking on the news here. First of all, Narnie and Princess got an interview with Douglas Gresham, and Douglas talks about basically what's happening with pre-production, talks about how they're almost done. He says the casting process is almost finalized, and it was just a pretty basic interview of what's going on with the film right now. Did anything stick out to you guys? What did you think of it? Doobie, how about you go first?
I thought it was interesting that he mentioned his favorite part of the book was with all the old Narnians, and how you said all those meetings for some of the most exciting scenes and things like that. Because I think there's some great characters that are introduced during those scenes. You know, you get Glenstorm and Reaper Chief and all those sort of iconic characters, and Trumpkin and Nickabrick, of course.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Just listening to his thoughts. And actually, the part with the old Narnians was my favorite, one of my favorite parts, too. How about you, Glumpuddle?
I agree with Doobie that all the stuff about meeting all the old Narnians is some of the most memorable stuff in the book, just because it's Caspian realizing that there's basically been this whole world living in his backyard that, you know, he had didn't know anything about, and it's just about rediscovering that. And so it's definitely one of the most memorable parts of the book, for sure. And I'm glad that Gresham agrees.
Yeah. It's kind of like Caspian's going through what the Pevensies went through, although he's actually in this sort of fairy tale world, and he's, you know, being woken up to another fairy tale happening in it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, what's interesting is that the Pevensies are actually part of the world that Caspian is now discovering. Whereas in the first film, the Pevensies were discovering all these amazing things. Now they're the thing being discovered. And so it's Prince Caspian's like the Witch in the Wardrobe, which, as I've said before, which is why it works well as a sequel.
Yeah. One thing I thought that it was interesting what Gresham said, where they said, how do you think Caspian will compare to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? And he says, I think it will be faster moving and in some ways more exciting than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and there are lots more Narnian characters to get to know. I think it's going to be fascinating, unquote. And, he goes on to say, it is our challenge as filmmakers to improve and raise our standards of excellence with each succeeding movie. But, of course, we did set the bar pretty high with the first one. I thought I was just encouraged to hear that because, of course, Gresham is taking a pretty active role as producer in the film. But it was, and he just talks about some things we've been speculating on how they have learned from some of the mistakes of the first film, and they do plan to improve upon the second.
Yeah, I think that's sort of a promising indication because, you know, I don't think there's any film that's really perfect, but The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you know, it got that feeling of the book through, and, you know, if they're aiming for sort of something more with the second one, I think that's a really good attitude.
I think it's really interesting that he talks about it being faster moving than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I would not describe the book Prince Caspian that way.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's definitely like right in the middle of the story how it just goes back in time and takes all the time to explain about Caspian and everything. And it's so it'll be interesting. It's possible they've had to adjust it, like we were talking about in a previous episode, change it around a little to make the timeline make a little more sense in the movie. And so it makes you wonder if maybe they actually have made it a faster story. And so that makes me curious to see what they've done with it.
Yeah, well, I know in the interview he says the pre-visualization is pretty much done, which was what they used in the first film to make sure that to basically plot out the whole film almost frame by frame. And so, you know, by this point, the script is finalized, more or less, and they will have a pretty good idea of the pacing. So I think he probably knows what he's talking about when he says faster paced, and it sounds like they've gotten some of those chinks worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go ahead. There's a little bit more news out, and first of all, it's kind of almost old news. We don't really hear a lot of news about Harry Gregson-Williams' musical score to the film anymore, but apparently there were, I think, a couple of Grammy nominations that were awarded to it. Well, not really awarded, but nominated.
Yeah, it's been nominated in the Best Score Soundtrack Album category, and it's got Harry Gregson-Williams up against Hans Zimmer, who's got two scores in the category, and also John Williams, who's got two scores there as well. So it's kind of like these three big prominent film composers duking it out.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see who wins that.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because, you know, Hans Zimmer has two nominations, Da Vinci Code and Pirates of the Caribbean 2, and John Williams has Munich and Memoirs of a Geisha as nominations. But, you know, Harry Gregson-Williams might come up on top, if for no other reason that, you know, the fact that, you know, if you have a bunch of people who are, say, oh, I'm going to vote for, you know, John Williams, or, you know, because he's my favorite composer, then all of a sudden they're divided. And it
exactly,
actually,
you get the split.
It doesn't help his votes, necessarily. So I'll be interested to see who wins that. And also the song Can't Take It In got a nomination, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And what's the artist's name? Is it Imogen Heap? Is that how you
pronounce
it?
Yeah, that's it.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, I think it's just good to see that Gregson-Williams is getting more
recognition
and more exposure. Because he's, we know he is, I think he is confirmed for the second film, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
But like you said before, with the two guys being nominated, it kind of splits their votes. It'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah. Well, do we want to move on then?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the real topic I wanted to discuss in this episode. And our friend Glumpuddle has gotten an early release of the extended edition for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I have been very anxious to listen to his thoughts on it. We have your review on NarniaWeb.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about just individual scenes there and what happens in each scene, but I'm more interested in just your overall thoughts. And I'd just like to start off with, first of all, did it meet your expectations? And what were they?
I was expecting there to be about 14 minutes, I think. 10 to 15 minutes is what most of us heard of new scenes. And actually, the back of the box on the Royal Edition says there's 14 minutes of new and extended scenes. But that's another big mystery, because the film is 8 minutes longer. I've timed it. I've looked at every new scene. I've looked at the two different running times, and it's 8 minutes longer. And so I don't know if it's some kind of mistake or what. But I was hoping just that there wouldn't necessarily be a lot of new scenes, that there would just be little moments put in here and there to just kind of not make the movie seem so rushed. And the new scenes they put back in, they do that. It's just that there aren't as many of them is the thing. And a lot of the visual effect shots, even though, you know, it's great to see them, I don't think they're quite up to the level as the rest of the film, which I said in my review. And the scenes aren't integrated back into the film quite as well we've seen in other cuts. Although I'm still very interested and happy to see them. But there's this one scene in particular that I mentioned in my review, which is the extended arrival of Spring, which to me just makes the set worth buying. It still isn't quite as magical as what's described in the book, but it's just nice that they do take a moment, you know, just to show the kids excitement over spring being back, and that it's a really joyful moment. And the way they've done it, it makes it a more memorable moment in the movie. So I'm particularly fond of that new scene.
Yeah, I really like the sound of those scenes because, like you said, we don't really see spring happening in the original cut. And even though we know the thaw is happening, it's kind of through this big waterfall sequence where it's focused on sort of the danger and the drama happening, and not so much, you know, the wonderment of the moment.
Yeah, did you, I'm interested in Glenpuddle, and what did you think the addition of new scenes did to the flow of the film? Because oftentimes, you know, they cut out a scene for reasons, because it maybe messes up the emotional mood that the audience has, or it maybe doesn't set the pace quite right. Did a lot of those affect the film negatively, or did some even affect it positively?
I don't think any of the new scenes have a huge effect on the film as a whole. There are a few moments, like when Edmund is crossing the courtyard. They just figured when they were cutting it, okay, we get it, there's statues, let's get the story moving again. But I think it works much better to sort of have, it's about twice as long now, I think, in the extended cut, just showing more creatures, and there's a moment where he actually sees a centaur, and it startles him. And I think it just seeing more creatures, and actually he sees a few dwarfs in it, just some more human-like creatures, that makes the scene a little more creepy as it is in the book. And that's just that's one of my favorite visuals from the book, is just this was such a strange image of, you know, all these very lifelike statues, and how weird it is to have to walk past them. And so there isn't really, none of the scenes have a huge effect on the film as a whole, but I think individual moments, for the most part, have improved.
Doobie, do you have any specific questions about any of this?
I guess my sort of question would be, do you think anything shouldn't have been removed from the original cut? Is it, I mean, short enough and important enough that it should have been left in?
The bit I think probably should have been left in to the original cut was the arrival of spring. Because I could go on and on about it. It's not like it's especially, you know, amazing the way it's shot or anything. It's just particularly the way they added that big action scene, the melting river scene. I think after that, to kind of slow down for a bit and just acknowledge the joy of spring being back is really important. And I think that does sort of, it just helps you realize, you know, just emphasizes the fact that, you know, there's been snow for 100 years and Narnia's been under this evil white witch for a long time, but now finally her power is breaking. So I think just those 30 seconds of spring I would have liked to have seen it in the original cut, and I'm very glad to see it in this cut.
How much more dialogue is there?
There isn't very much new dialogue. You know, just a few lines here and there. There isn't one whole new scene, I don't think, in the whole film. It's just, bit of extended scenes, I think it's about 40 seconds or so. There aren't like whole new scenes they put back in. There's probably about five lines or so, I would say, of dialogue. There's not much.
Do we find out if Edmund was really scratching the bottom of the professor's chair?
I'm afraid not. That'll be left to our imaginations, I suppose.
Okay, because I know there was people would post stuff on the forums that were pieces of footage from the video game that didn't make it into the film. And I wasn't sure how much of that was put in the extended edition.
I'm afraid none of it. I know there was one moment where Lucy suggests hide and seek, and Edmund says hide and seek is for children, which explains why when they're playing cricket later, Peter says, I thought you said it was a kid's game, but I'm not sure why they did not put it back in this extended cut.
Hmm. Which, in your mind, is the definitive version of the film? I mean, if you were to say, hey, there's this great movie called Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or hey, you've read the book, let me show you the movie, which would you show that person?
That's an interesting question. In one sense, I don't think they're so dramatically different that it matters too much. But I'd say, I mean, I've seen both versions, and I've read the book, and I think that from now on, when I say, hey, I'm going to watch Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I'm going to watch the extended cut, I would say, just for, you know, this, because the stuff they put back in, not that it makes a huge difference, but I do pretty much like what they put back in. There's nothing, there aren't really any new scenes they put back in that I just, you know, really wish they hadn't put back in. So I would say the extended cut is probably what I'm going to watch from now on.
Yeah, I was just wondering, with the extended cut in regards to the battle scenes. They are obviously extended in the original cut already from what we saw in the book. And did they need to be extended furthermore, do you think, in the extended edition? Did it make a significant difference to the feeling of the battle?
Well, I'm a book purist, so I feel that the battle was probably, you know, long enough in the original cut. But some of the stuff they put back in is pretty good. The extended Aureus and Ottman fight I particularly like. It's much more, there's a lot of speed and energy, and it just makes more sense since Ottman was kind of sort of like one of the main villains they made him towards the end of the film. And it makes more sense to for time killing him off. And some of the Phoenix was all right, but I felt that it was probably better for that moment in the battle, maybe, just to have the Phoenix just soar in instead of having, you know, a lot like they have where the dwarves are shooting arrows at it and stuff. It's more like the Phoenix is more of a big moment in the battle now. But
okay.
I would say it doesn't make a significant difference, you know, and I'm glad to see some of those shots, and I think many fans will as well.
Is there anything in the extended cut that would have changed the rating of had it been in the theatrical cut?
Yes, not surprisingly, the shots of the creatures burning after the Phoenix comes in has been put back in, and I think which we believe were cut out of the original release so that the movie could be rated PG. And I think most likely, although this film, this version of the film does not appear to be rated, when I look on the back, there's a warning message which says, you know, some scenes might not be appropriate for people under 17, which I don't quite understand. I don't think there's anything here that's that bad. But, yeah, that scene that we all knew was taking off for rating reasons is back into this version.
Lionel, the wardrobe, the NC-17 version coming to the U.S.
That's right. Well, I'm not sure how well that would fly, but...
Well, yeah, now, there's a lot more on the... I guess that's only all on the first disc, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And would you like to give us kind of a recap of the next three discs, and then we could go over each one?
Well, the second disc is just a repeat disc from the collector's edition, but so you know, there's nothing new on there. Disc three, there's a feature. I'm not really sure if I should call it a documentary or not. I suppose I can call it a movie. It's called C.S. Lewis, Dreamer of Narnia, and it's a really not really what I was expecting. It's a very unique approach to this. It's not just a documentary about his life. It's basically they have an actor playing Lewis, sort of talking about his life and sort of almost narrating his own life. And then every so often, they'll have interviews from friends and scholars, including Douglas Gresham, will come in every so often. And one of the interesting things they do is they take Pauline Baynes' illustrations, which I love so much in the book, and they animate them and make them come to life, which, you know, I'm such a big fan of Pauline Baynes, so I loved it, and it was very interesting. And if I ever make another Prince Caspian fan trailer, I'm definitely going to use some of those. But, I quite enjoyed everything on Disc 3. And Disc 4, that was another huge surprise. Visualizing the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a documentary, and it's sort of like... It's difficult to describe. It's like an audio commentary with a pop-up feature turned on because there's split screens throughout. It's basically just watching the movie. And there's usually three split screens. One is always showing the movie. One of them is showing someone from the cast or crew discussing the scene. And the third screen, and usually the biggest, is showing behind-the-scenes footage. And it was hard to get used to at first, but once I did, I wondered, you know, why has no one else done this before? It just sort of ensures that... Mm-hmm. Each and every scene gets discussed, and which doesn't, you know, always happen on behind-the-scenes documentaries. And I thought it was a very creative idea, and I'm kind of hoping other studios try it with their movies in the future.
Wow. And so going back to the third disc, it sounds kind of like the Beyond Narnia documentary or a docudrama that was done last year. Is it at all similar to that?
I haven't actually seen that one, but what I've heard of that suggests that it is similar to that, yes, in a way.
I was just wondering, how much do you see of C.S. Lewis's life? Is it a full documentary, or is it sort of, does it focus on the Narnia books? Sort of, how in-depth does it go?
That's an interesting question, because its focus is definitely on C.S. Lewis's life, But sort of for much of it, they're basically comparing his life to things found in the Narnia books. They try to reference and similarities to his life as much as possible. So basically, the foundation of the feature is C.S. Lewis, but they try to reference Narnia in it as much as possible. And interestingly enough, there aren't any clips or even any mention of the movie in it. It's just about C.S. Lewis and the books, which I actually kind of appreciate that aspect of it.
Okay, yeah, sort of a literary approach.
Yeah.
Did they talk about the kind of Christian themes that just his Christian worldview that influenced the books? Do they talk about that? Because I know, for instance, in the disc on the second disc of the collector's edition, they just say he was informed by his faith when writing the books, and it was kept pretty vague there. What kind of treatment does that get in the docudrama or documentary?
Well, surprisingly, they talk quite a bit about it. That's actually, I think, one of the main focus, is definitely a very large chunk of the documentary or movie or whatever you want to call it, is spent discussing his faith, really get into how he converted to Christianity and the whole story there. So I'm very surprised and pleased that a very large chunk of it does discuss that aspect of his life, which is very important.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I wasn't sure how it was going to turn out at first. You were talking about the fourth disc. Then I guess, does it have the entire film again on the fourth disc?
In a way, yes. I mean, you can't watch just the film, but it's basically one of the split screens is always showing the film, and it shows it from beginning to end, including the credits, actually. So this documentary is exactly 2 hours and 20 minutes long. And so it's basically watching the film from beginning to end, which usually they'll fade the sound out when someone's talking, but just basically the whole movie from beginning to end with footage, behind the scenes footage and interviews, and other screens around it. It's a very interesting idea, and I'm surprised it works. I think some people might find them distracting, but I think it's a really, really creative idea.
And is it the extended cut or the theatrical cut?
It's a theatrical cut that they use in the documentary.
Okay.
Well, that sounds great, since I think you said the commentaries on the extended cut are not re-recorded. They're just the same ones from the regular.
Yeah, it's the same one. They've actually tried to re-edit some of what they're saying to so it'll fit the running time. But there's just a few parts where tell what they're saying doesn't actually make sense with what's going on screen. And so they might have been better off just leaving out the commentaries for this edition. But, I think that's all right.
One thing I thought of is, I think at one point in the commentary, I start talking about the frozen fish, and we know the frozen fish got put back in the extended cut. So do they still talk about it?
Oh, yeah, I did go back and check that part, and they've taken out just that part right there where Lucy talks about, you cut out the fish, So, yeah, they've done some of that, yeah. But I did go back and I looked at where they mentioned Tumnus's horn tips, which that scene's not in the extended cut, and they still talk about that scene and how it was cut.
Okay.
So now, what else is on the fourth disc? I'm a little foggy on that.
There's another feature, it's about 7 or 8 minutes long, called Anatomy of a Scene Behind the Battle, which is kind of similar to a feature on disc 2, which was about the melting river. Just like I say in my review, if you like the stuff on disc 2, you're going to like this. And it's just a very quick overview of basically what a nightmare it was to shoot that scene. And, it's really amazing it came out as well as it did. But, I think this is a more traditional approach to, behind the scenes. And, I quite enjoyed it.
Okay, so just kind of any last thoughts or questions here, Doobie?
I think all the stuff on the fourth disc sounds good. Do you think maybe they should have waited and released the extended edition DVD rather than the special edition DVD? Because I know some people are disappointed that they missed out on the extra features the first time around with the special edition.
I know fans who actually made themselves wait several months and not buy the collector's edition and just wait for the extended cut. And I'm not sure if this was worth the wait, but I think if they waited this long, I would recommend that they go ahead and buy the extended cut over the new one, mostly for the sake of the special features. And I think that's, I would definitely recommend they buy the extended cut over the collector's edition if they don't have either.
Do you think, kind of going off of that tangent, that thought, do you think maybe they should have waited to release the extended cut a little longer so that they could have had more time to patch up the special effects and maybe even had enough time to put in the dancing scene?
Well, I suspect the reason, obviously they wanted to have it out in time for this Christmas, but I suspect maybe Adamson didn't think he was going to have time to, you know, work with them because he was going to be deep into shooting or post-production on Prince Caspian by then. So I suspect that was probably one of the reasons, and which is a shame. They could have used it as sort of a promotion for Prince Caspian, which is how Lord of the Rings used theirs, basically. So, but I suspect that probably had, if they could have, that would have been great. I would have liked to have seen the dancing scene and some of the other scenes that we know were cut. But yeah, probably just Adamson would have been, his schedule would have been booked with shooting and completing Prince Caspian.
So overall, what are your kind of just overall thoughts of it? Is it worth the money? Because what is the price you pay for it?
You have to be, I think, this isn't someone who's like, if you're just like a casual fan of the movie or a casual fan of the books, like you're probably not going to want this edition. Now that doesn't mean if you don't get it that you're not an Narnia fan, but this is for like, the people that you know are really into Narnia, really, and maybe even just into filmmaking in general. I would recommend DVD for people that are really into both Narnia, just interested in filmmaking in general for the extras, which I'm interested in both, so I'm very glad I got it.
So from now on, then, this will be kind of your definitive version?
Yeah, I would say, I'm hesitant to call it the definitive version, but pretty much I would say, you know, when I watch the movie, I'm probably going to watch the extended cut.
Well, thank you very much for that review and for your thoughts there. And I think we've kick this horse about as far as we can. No offense to any horse lovers out there. But I want to thank you both for joining me today. This has been terrific. We'll have to try to do it again.
Sure, yes. It's been very enjoyable.
Awesome.
All right, thank you very much for joining me. You both take care.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
That was Doobie and Glumpuddle with us today on the discussion. If you would like to email any of us, our emails are doobie@narniaweb.com, glumpuddle@narniaweb.com, and rillian@narniaweb.com. And again, if you have any feedback concerning the podcast, or if you have any questions about Narnia or the films, please email me at rillian@narniaweb.com, and we'll do our best to answer those questions for you. And that pretty much wraps up this episode. Make sure you again check narniaweb.com for the latest news. And until next time, I'm your host, Rillian. Merry Christmas.